Hello and welcome to the SBP podcast, The Voice of Mobile Film. I'm your host, Susie Botello, and you're listening to episode 70. Our guest is Rob Higgins, and he's an experienced filmmaker, but like most filmmakers, even the good ones that I know, he admits that he's got a lot to learn about filmmaking. However, his films are pretty well made. And then listen to this. He stumbles into something that inspires him, and he grabs his phone. And then, well, he just may be the first filmmaker to make a feature-length film with a new iPhone 11. And in this episode, you're going to hear Rob talk about how he got here and where he's going from here. Now listen to the end, because at one point I'm going to ask him the one question that we all want to hear. I asked him that now that he's filmed an entire feature film with the iPhone 11, after filming with other cameras, is iPhone 11 a game changer? Everybody, I'm here talking to Rob Higgins. Rob is a feature filmmaker, right, Rob?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm on my third, so I just can't seem to stop making them.
Yeah. Rob, tell us a little bit about where you are. Rob is on the East Coast right now. Is it raining over there where you are, by the way? Because it's raining in California.
No, it's not raining over here. It's just cold. The thing about being in Maryland is we're sort of famous for saying, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes. kind of just changes with its moods. And it's just sort of a mild chill. It's not totally freezing yet. It's above freezing at least, but it is cold.
Okay, so for California people, it's probably freezing to death and from our world, because in our climate, you know, we're freezing if we're anywhere near the 60s, just so you know.
Yeah, so it's in the 30s, so you guys would be freezing out, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Share with our listeners, Rob, a little bit about your history and what was the name of the town that you're in?
Well, I'm currently in Frederick, Maryland, which is sort of my adopted city. I grew up in Baltimore and went to high school with Michael Phelps. But now I'm here in this sort of little artsy city, Frederick, Maryland, about 45 minutes from Baltimore. And it's just, it's one of the friendliest cities that I've ever lived in. And it's really sort of this really great place for artists and especially for independent filmmakers. And it's always been like that. There's a 72-hour film festival every year, and whenever they have the 72-hour film festival, you can always go downtown, and like restaurants will close certain sections off and let people film, and they're just really, really open to it, and nobody ever like throws up a stink. It's just a really nice place to shoot, and it's like a little mini Austin, Texas. So we're sort of proud of that, and I'm very proud of my adopted city.
Oh, that sounds like a movie in itself. Like you can make a little Christmas movie or something there.
Yeah, it would be a pretty movie.
Yeah. So going back to your history, how did you fall in love with film? I'm assuming that you fell in love with film. If you're going through the smartphone is a great tool to have for filmmaking, but it's also, if you're used to filmmaking, it's kind of a headache, right? If you're used to working with traditional cameras. But tell me a little bit about your history and what got you involved in the filmmaking community, and then share how you, if you don't mind, how you got involved with the smartphone filmmaking.
Well, okay. Well, I learned how to, I got into filmmaking through screenwriting. My first DVD ever was The Matrix. And when I got it for my birthday, I think it was my 17th birthday, we didn't even really have a DVD player to watch it on the television with. We had to watch it on my dad's laptop. And because of that, on the DVD ROM features, there was the screenplay. And before I read that script, I guess I assumed that actors just came on set and just made things up. It seems really weird to me to think about that now, but I had no idea that A, that movies were written, and B, that there was such a sort of strict format to it. And I read that script over and over and over and over again, and then taught myself screenwriting, and I wrote my first movie at age 17.
Wow.
And tried to make it, and it was about a theater lock-in because I was a theater kid, and I got suspended.
Wait, what's a theater kid?
I was just a theater nerd. Like, we had this sort of advanced acting class that all the theater nerds took. And we had this wonderful teacher, the dearly departed Don Leifert, who I owe a lot of my filmmaking career to, because he sort of ignited that spark. He was very much a film head, and he'd been in these old B-list movies from the 70s where he played characters like the Psycho Biker. So he's very much about independent film, and he had a lot of opinions on film, and he and I would sit in the theater during rehearsals for plays and talk about movies. And he's not with us anymore, but he is with me every day. I really owe a lot of who I am to Don Leifert. And being in that class made me want to make things with my friends. And so I wrote this movie about a theater class, and took me about a year of just putting fingers to keys every day. And I wrote that script, and then I sent it to the administration at my school, hoping that they would be on board and asking for permission to shoot the film. And I got suspended, which taught me my first indie film lesson. Do not ask anyone to give you permission to follow your dreams, because there's no guarantee that they will say yes, and more than likely they will say no. So they sort of taught me that
How come they suspended you, though?
They said that I was soliciting teachers. They literally suspended me for asking for permission. So I stopped doing that.
Never heard of that before. That's very, very, to me anyways, it's unique.
Well, I think being sort of a black filmmaker, you find doors sometimes closed to you that would otherwise be open. And I feel like, especially being a large black person, in that I was, 6'4", and in football shape and on the football team, I think it was kind of one of those things where it's kind of like stay in your lane. People weren't ready to see me as a filmmaker. I remember as much as I was in love with film and talked about it all the time, I was on the school newspaper staff, and I couldn't get my journalism teacher to let me write a movie review. I used to write 2 movie reviews every month, and I would submit them, and that would frequently get rejected. No reason why, just that sort of thing. And I don't think that necessarily that anyone was trying to be overtly racist. It was just, there are certain ways that you see certain people. And I just feel like people did not see me as the emerging filmmaker that I was.
That's really odd. I mean, it's common, now that you've explained it. Roadblocks, and the film industry has its own gatekeepers for everybody as well, as long as you're not in the club or part of the network too.
And it just, for me, it didn't discourage me. It just made me like more encouraged for people to go, well, I'm not going to give you a chance to reject me. I remember the first A I ever got in my journalism class. I remember my teacher handed me back an article that I'd written and it had an A on it. And we've been going back and forth on different things and until I learned the format, and he handed it back to me and he said, I couldn't find anything wrong with this. And wow. That's sort of where I wanted to come at everything, where I don't, when someone comes to me and they say, you know, they can't reject me because there's nothing wrong with it. There's absolutely nothing that they can say bad about it because it's good. So awesome. That's sort of my MO, like all the time. So, as for how I came into the mobile filmmaking community, that sort of came into my love of the iPhone as a device. And I remember watching the original keynote for the iPhone back in 2007. And I remember saying to a friend of mine that eventually it was going to be something where you could make an entire movie on your phone. I predicted that right there and then. And I knew that that day was coming and I was just waiting for it. And then Tangerine rolled around and it was there. But I really sort of jumped on board because I was listening to the keynote for Mark Duplass's The Calvary Isn't Coming speech back in 2015. Hmm. And he was saying that you should make a movie for $1,000. And that sliver of something stuck in my head for almost 3 years. And then finally, I kept thinking about it. And I was like, what would a $1,000 movie even look like? And how would you do it? How could, if you take that sort of thought experiment that Mark was saying that anyone can make a movie for $1,000. And I was like, well, what would you shoot on? It would have to be your phone, because that's the camera that everybody has. If you're talking about even something as like the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera, which is a $1,300 camera, it's one of the cheapest cinema cameras that you can buy. But at the same time, it's still a buy-in price of $1,300 just to start. And I know from experience that to make it seaworthy, as they say, would cost thousands more. So something
and it's an addition to your arsenal of things that you get, right? Because the phone, you just have it with you because it's your phone. It just happens to be a wonderful camera too. But if you have to go out and buy a camera, it doesn't matter if it's $400 or $600 or $1,000 or, you know, whatever it is, it's extra. It's an extra cost that you don't use for anything other than a camera.
Well, yeah. And I started thinking about it, and I started thinking about the things that I wanted in a phone. And then I really started thinking about the fact that I feel like the phone at this point is really less of a camera and more of a mobile studio. That to me is very attractive, because the more productions that I've done, the more I've relied on my phone, to the point where the last production, it was almost everything was done on a phone, where, you know, you can do scheduling. There's a program called ShotLister that is perfect for keeping a live schedule of what you're doing, and you put your shots in and you tell them when you want to take lunch and what time it'll tell you how much time that you have per shot and when you're behind. And so you can literally just change things, be like, okay, this thing says that I'm, you know, such and such minutes behind. Let me delete these shots because I don't need them, because I've already got this coverage. And now we're back on schedule. And it's a beautiful app. It's on a phone. Yeah. The Slating app. Filmic Pro, come on. Like, all day. There are so many different things now, like, that are on a phone that if you tried to take them from different places, it would be a lot of different gear and a lot of money, but they're inexpensive and they're on the phone and they're in your pocket, so they're convenient. And so for me, I was like, it's a no-brainer. If you're talking about shooting on a phone, it's not necessarily science fiction anymore. The technology was there. And of course, then my sort of spirit animal, Steven Soderbergh, shot a movie on one and loved it, and so much that he shot a second movie on it. And so I was like, all right, well, Soderbergh sort of minted it. So there you go. There's no excuse anymore.
Your spirit animal. I just have to ask you a little more about that.
Oh yeah. Soderbergh is, as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the greatest living filmmakers ever. His body of work is, I feel like, almost unparalleled. He's got, you know, big studio, you know, movies like Ocean's 11 through 13. And then he has things like Bubble or Unsane or Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Just they're all over the place. Haywire. Like, and then he has that TV show, The Nick. His work is, he's never one to stay in the same place. And I love his eye. I mean, Magic Mike. Come on, the guy is clearly a genius, and he just there's a really great bunch of behind the scenes stuff where you just see him in this wheelchair with a tiny gimbal and him shooting on a phone with the I think it's a moment lens on his, and I'm just like, that's Steven Soderbergh.
I remember we shot things. I used to work in video productions, and we used to go to, I think it was the blood bank or something like that. They would loan us their wheelchairs so that we could use them on shoots, because they were so smooth. You know, you could do dolly shots on wheelchairs. A lot of filmmakers have used them.
Yeah, it's a Robert Rodriguez trick. He sort of pioneered that. The indie film Bible, of course, is Rebel Without a Crew. I'm still learning lessons from Rodriguez. He's probably my other spirit animal. The two of them, I've read both their books, Rebel Without a Crew. And then, Soderbergh has a book that's out of print now that is sort of his diary while he was making Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And I love it. I've read it cover to cover at least 3 times. It's brilliant and full of all these insights of him as he's directing his first movie. And I just love it to death. So I think a lot of me coming to the iPhone was definitely Soderbergh. And then the iPhone 10 came out and I sort of fell in love with it as a filmmaking device. I was shooting a lot of different things on it. And then we shot a short called Draining the Lizard on it as a proof of concept for my feature film Barbara, and the image that we got off of it was ridiculous. I said this on my YouTube channel, but it was kind of like finding out that your pistol is a hand cannon, like that it's capable of shotgun force, because I don't think I had low expectations, but I didn't have as expectations where I was holding the footage up to red camera footage and it was measuring up, and that didn't seem like it should be possible on a phone. It just didn't. It just did not. And it absolutely did. And it was beautiful, and undoubtedly it needs a lot of light. You can't mess around with lights in terms of shooting on a phone, but with the light, it was capable of such beauty that it literally blew me away. And even being an advocate for shooting on a phone.
Well, I've seen films shot with all sorts of cameras, you know, and I've seen films shot with phones that look way better than some of the traditional camera films as well. But it also, you know, there's so many different things that affect the value of your production on a visual level. And then there's the psychological one, and I believe also that sound has a lot to do with it, with how a viewer sees and what they get out of your film has a lot to do with sound. I know you sent me some production photos, and that was from your film Barbara, right?
Yes.
And I noticed there that you're shooting on the phone, but you're using a separate recording device for the sound. Are you having any issues, or have you ever had any issues with syncing the audio separately on, you know, once you get into the editing room?
No, I use DaVinci Resolve, and DaVinci has a auto sync function that's literally almost point and click.
Yeah.
And because we're shooting on the phone and we're getting pretty decent scratch audio, just putting the lavs, we did lavs and we used a boom. There were certain scenes that we couldn't lav, so we used a boom. But and we had two H4Ns. One was mine and one was borrowed. And the auto sync works pretty well. All you have to do is literally just put them in the same, as long as the footage is organized very well. I find that's key. You have to organize the footage where it all has to be in the same place. And so with the right organization, I don't have any problems syncing up. I haven't had any problems so far. So no, it's pretty seamless. I feel like there's so many different ways to cheat sound. I mean, you can do lavs from other phones. You can also do lavs into the H4N like we did. You can also use phones as lavs. Like I've literally done that where we've needed to lav someone, and we literally just put the phone in voice memo mode and left it on a table or left it in an actor's pocket, and the sound quality usually is pretty good enough as long as the actor doesn't move so much.
Right.
So there's all sorts of ways to sort of skin that cat. And I feel like a lot of people don't know how to cheat.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also the earbuds have a microphone, you know, so that's another way of doing it. And the other thing is, you know, you can plug in XLR mics even, with the right adapters. I like the iRig Pre to plug that into your iPhone and just use an XLR cable and directly into a professional microphone. Because a lot of filmmakers, you know, I do like to tell filmmakers, you know, you have a lot of stuff. You don't need to go out and buy new things just to use the phone, you know, for your camera. I mean, it's pretty awesome. It took when I was testing that stuff, it took a long time and a lot of research, and I hate forums. Do you like forums, going into forums? I hate researching something and having to dig through a million conversations to find the right one, because, you know, there's always those people in forums that are just complaining and telling you that you can't do something, and you have to go through all that, and then you find the right person, and then people who don't know what they're talking about. It's just kind of a pain.
Yeah, I've always been a YouTube person. I consider myself YouTube taught. Most of my, you know, if I've got a question or something like that, I'm always quick to YouTube or Google it first. I'm really not a forum person where, like you said, it's like digging through layers of things before you find something. Like, I'll do it if I actually have to, but if I can't find it on YouTube. But I'm very much to a person who's, you know, will do that or just try something. The adapter that we used for most of the film to link my to attach my phone to my tripod was literally just a $2 piece of equipment that I got from B&H. I just took that and attached it to it, and there it was. It worked for most of the shoot until we had sort of a mini accident where the tripod fell over. Luckily, the phone wasn't attached, but the adapter was, and then it broke and had to be replaced.
I know. Where do you get the insurance and the funding for a $2 adapter, right?
Yeah, you really can't. So, but yeah, I feel like a lot of stuff is, I don't know. I feel if I can't find it, I'm usually trying something different. But I've had a lot of filmmaker friends, and they've always, we're always trading hacks with one another. Things that we do and things that we've seen other people do, and we just sort of trade stories. And that's, I think, where a lot of my stuff comes from if I can't Google or YouTube it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things in film festivals as well that that, you know, people do. People really do connect. I mean, you're all filmmakers. I don't know if you're aware of not the International Mobile Film Festival, which is our film festival. And people from all over the world come. And when they're there, they know that every single filmmaker has shot a film, their film with a smartphone. So they really, you know, I wouldn't say they knock each other out, but they really take advantage of that and have a lot of conversations about the tricks. You know, there's so many tricks and so many, you know, as far as troubleshooting, right? What is, what are some of the things that that you've had to kind of, you know, outside of tripods following and things like that, what are some of the tricks that you've learned through, because I'm sure you've encountered some challenges, right?
Okay, well, I'm glad you asked this question because we're literally going through like a whole video series of challenges that, of things that we learned while we were making Barbara. I think the biggest sort of challenge to overcome is that sort of filmmaker mindset. Like, and I keep saying this, but your phone is not a camera; it's a phone, and that means that it's subject to a lot of different quirks. Like when we shot our short, our sort of proof of concept short, Draining the Lizard, we had an issue with FAT32 where files can only be of a certain size. And when we were shooting in Filmic Pro on the extreme sort of, on the extreme bit rate, we were shooting about a gig a minute, which meant that we were hitting about for like the FAT32 gig limit every 4 minutes. And unlike a regular camera, which would just switch over to a new clip, same way that a C100 would or something like that, unfortunately, the phone would just stop. It would stop recording. And we didn't know because it looked like it was continued to record. We didn't know until we got into post. We were trying to do a one-shot short, like a one-er, and the whole thing was supposed to be about 5 minutes long. Of the 8 takes that we did, only 2 survived, and only 1 was good.
Oh, no.
So that sort of, it was a costly lesson to learn, but the short still turned out great. But the thing that we, that it really sort of set up was like, you have to treat the phone the way it is. It has certain quirks. Not just that, but also the light and the fact that it is not a camera. You have to plan accordingly. One of the biggest things was the light. And we originally were supposed to shoot the movie on my iPhone 10, but we switched to the iPhone 11 Pro Max, which turned out to be kind of a blessing because we originally were supposed to shoot it on moment lenses, and the moment lenses have a sort of filter that would have cost us some money that was just not in the budget. So we found this $20 solution and this ND filter that you could clip onto the phone. And that worked out great because I sort of leaned into the fact that the phone needed a lot of light. So we, our location had a lot of sunlight that we used. And that ND filter was just kind of choice for getting the right look while staying at the 148 shutter speed that I wanted to maintain throughout the film. And needing that light, I think, was probably the biggest challenge that we faced on set, both for Draining the Lizard and for Barbara, where we just were constantly trying to make the best of the light that we had. We only had two lights that I would call like actual lights, one of which was broken. Oh. And we just had to make do with what we had. I think we still got really beautiful footage. But sometimes in certain circumstances, things were a bit of a struggle and we had to cheat a lot. So I feel like the light and the camera not being able to stop down like normal cameras do in order to deal with the fact that you are shooting outside, those were sort of our biggest challenges. Otherwise, we really didn't have many issues on set. I think the best thing that I loved about shooting on the iPhone was that we shot so fast. We were able to shoot an 89-page movie in 6 days with eight-hour days, and we didn't make all of our days. The first 2 days we didn't make, the third one we did, the fourth one we did, the fifth one we did, and the sixth one we did. But even with us being under SAG rules, which meant that we could not go over that 8-hour time limit, we still were able to shoot very fast and get quality stuff. And I don't think we could have done that on, say, like a pocket cinema camera or even a C100, which I feel like is one of the most underrated cameras that's in existence right now. But we were just able to shoot fast and create a workflow that worked for us. Speaking of problems that we thought we were going to have, but we didn't, I made the decision to leave the footage inside of Filmic Pro instead of having the footage go to my camera roll. And leaving it inside of Filmic Pro actually helped us so that when we attached the phone to my laptop and used iTunes to drag and drop the footage onto the solid state drive, we were literally dropping about 40 gigs of footage at a time, and it only took maybe 20 minutes. It was great. And that workflow really worked for us. So we were able to dump 2 times a day, one time during our scheduled lunch break and the other time during at the end of the shoot day. And that workflow stayed with us through the entire shoot, and we didn't have any lost footage. We didn't have any major drops. We didn't have any major crashes. We got very lucky in that respect. And so that was one problem that we end up not having. And I remember my wife being extremely worried about that. That was one of the things that was going to plague us through the whole set.
Yeah. Well, okay. Now we've touched upon your film. Barbara, why don't you share with us, first of all, a brief synopsis of what the film is about?
Well, I like to say Barbara is a social horror film about a woman named Barbara who crashes on a couple's couch and almost destroys their marriage. I've been sort of writing it on and off since about 2015. I remember my first foray into Barbara, I sort of wrote the first 20 pages and then got stuck. But I was very captivated by the characters. I think everybody has their own sort of Barbara, this sort of bad friend who is sort of stuck in that place that you were, let's say, in your 20s. And you don't know how they live their lives. They seem to have this sort of external bubble of luck that only they have, that they're able to find themselves in these situations where they're like, oh, so-and-so left me this house, or, you know, I'm inheriting this money. And you're like, how are you still living like this in your 30s, in your 40s? How are you this person still? And, what I think beyond that, I just wanted to tell a modern story about marriage. Sort of one of my, definitely one of my sort of, vested interests. I'm very much about the subject of marriage, and I don't feel like it's represented very well on screen. It's always, I feel like, you know, these people are getting a divorce, or it's sort of a romantic comedy thing. I always want to do a romantic comedy about people who are still married. I mean, who are married, and they're sort of trying to maintain that romance within the marriage. I think that's the most interesting to me, to see people navigating the sort of day-to-day of marriage to try to find ways to keep that to grow, and as well as maintain a relationship. And I don't feel like that gets explored enough. And that was sort of the bee in my bonnet when I was writing Barbara, about these characters who are sort of coasting along in their marriage. And along comes this human wrecking ball and just knocks their marriage down to the foundations. And they find themselves questioning, have they grown apart? Is their marriage worth saving? And is I Love You enough? And I just found that those sort of internal questions very interesting. And the character study of these three people in this situation. So that was sort of where that script came from. And
you know, the first script that you were telling me about, the first screenplay that you wrote when you were a teenager, what was was that also on that same concept? I mean, or what? Because I find, you know, on your films that they kind of follow that theme, you know?
Yeah, I definitely like to sort of explore like the behind the scenes of things, or sort of explore the minutia of a lot of different things. And I definitely feel like my first script was definitely about people. I think my biggest thing when I wrote Lock-In was that I wanted to include everyone in my class. But at the heart of it, of course, was this relationship that I sort of went through myself, where I remember I was trying to expand upon this friendship that I had in a romantic way, and it didn't go the way that I thought it would, and the harsh lessons of that. And so, yeah, I'm always sort of trying to sort of find the minutiae of what makes people tick, and that sort of human drama that is missed in a lot of different movies. I feel like, unless you're doing Noah Baumbach movies, but I feel like a lot of those smaller things get missed, and stories like this, maybe people think that they aren't marketable. Because I remember a lot of people were reading the script to Barbara and were telling me, they were like, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if people are going to get it. And I feel like a lot of that sort of went, like I was hearing people's concerns, but I feel like a lot of them got answered on set, where even my wife was looking at certain scenes that I had written. And then when people sat down to perform them, people started laughing, and I was like, see, this is what it was. It was always going to be like this. A lot of people were just like, oh, okay. I was worried about that, but it's funny. And I was like, well, I always thought it was funny. I definitely think a lot of people accuse me of being a scary person on the page. I remember having that for my second movie, Around the World. There were a lot of people. I went through so many different auditions for actresses for my lead role. And a lot of people thought that the role, that the movie was so scary. And I just kept pushing. I was like, I feel like when you hear how I'm going to shoot it and the things that I'm going to shoot, it's not going to be very scary. And then a lot of those people came back and was like, oh, okay, I see what you were trying to do. Okay. Yeah. It was, I really liked it. And I just,
yeah,
sort of been the story of my life.
You have a style about the storytelling, and you know, a lot of directors in film, you know, especially when they start young like you did, they sort of use the films and the stories that they share kind of tend to be a little bit exploratory, and they tend to be personal. But what I mean by personal is not necessarily because it's something you've experienced, but because we're all human, you know, and that's the kind of personal that I mean. It's like a human story.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my favorite movies are inherently about family or personal stories. I love stories like Mike Nichols' Closer. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. The Breakfast Club. Club is so, so good. And it has literally my favorite ending of all time. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. She's Got a Habit. Just these films are about people and about just folks trying to live their lives. And I always think I like to tell stories about people, not necessarily on the fringe of society, but people who are not afraid to live out loud. And sort of Barbara definitely sort of fits in that mold where you have this character who, while kind of inherently despicable, I almost respect her for her ability to be able to live outside of the sort of norms that people sort of expect of you. I feel like the main characters in the main couple in Barbara, Lena and Neil, they are coasting along in their marriage. And I feel like a lot of people get to that place where they just coast and they're like, well, we're still together. We're fine. Right. Like we're still doing okay. 'Cause we're making it work. We're going to work and we're paying our bills and things are working out. And, you know, we have family holidays and vacations. We're still fine. Right. And underneath is the simmering tension. And then it, you know, something happens that you feel like should be able to be forgiven or at least worked out. And it just wrecks the whole train. She is wrecked. And it's all due to like the fact that people, I think, have these societal expectations on them. And they just sort of let that run their relationship. And I think my films are very much about societal expectations, what people expect of you.
Yeah, it's like living in a template, right?
Yeah. Like you have to check these boxes and be these people. If you are this, then you must be that. And I think a lot of my films very much are about sort of like either escaping or being held captive to societal expectations, to sort of the detriment of growth and personal growth and happiness. Sometimes it's, you know, family, sometimes it's an external force, sometimes it's internal. And in this case, I think it's sort of both with Barbara and the sort of expectations that I feel like the two characters have placed upon each other because of the fact that they're married. And I really wanted to explore that. Like I was tempted to, I remember in earlier drafts of the script, not to spoil anything, but to make the sort of the lead female part pregnant and sort of to give, because I wanted to give the couple a reason to stay together. And then I realized that I was putting myself in my own box where I was literally trying to make this happen. Like I wanted these two characters to choose each other. And I feel like giving them this artificial lifeline in having a child between them was too easy. And I really wanted the two characters to choose each other in the end. And time will tell whether or not I succeeded in that endeavor, but I'm hoping that I eventually got there.
Well, now that you've sold everyone the movie, everyone's curious and everyone's probably interested in this. This movie is coming out this month, right? In December?
It's coming out at the New Year's Day. So the day this month ends, it'll be out. But yeah, we're we've got the sort of cast and crew screening coming up next week, and I'm very excited to sort of use that as like a testing ground before we put the finishing touches on the movie.
How long is the film itself? Is it? I know it's a feature, right? But how long is it?
It's about 85 minutes.
85 minutes,
Mm-hmm. With some cuts. The script was about 89, and I didn't want to make it any longer than that. And I was sort of landing there. But with some cuts, it's going to be about 85 minutes. And it's been an interesting edit. I can say that going back to shooting on a phone, there are mistakes that we made that were mine, not the phone. And in terms of how we shot something, and there was one day where we literally shot something until we ran out of light and we had to reshoot the ending, things like that. And there's always going to be mistakes that you see that no one else sees. They'll be invisible to the audience, but you'll be able to pick them out and they'll bother you. And so I remember feeling at the end of the film, I said to my wife, I would really like to shoot another one on the phone. And she was like, are you kidding? And I was like, no, I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. After we shot the movie, I started shooting my weekly vlogs for my YouTube channel on the phone. So every thing that we've done since Barbara has been on the phone, and no one can tell because the quality is so high.
Yeah.
And it's been really great. And the next one, I really feel like I want to do it the way we sort of intended Barbara to be shot originally, which was on moment lenses, especially the moment anamorphic. And so I feel like I want to take the power of the 11 Pro and pair that with the moment anamorphic and shoot another movie on the phone. I'm not sure what the script would be, and it would have to be something that was right for to shoot on a phone. There are certain movies I feel like would either be too big or the phone would just be a poor choice for it.
Do you consider that, because that's one of the things you're trying to get attention as a feature filmmaker shooting with the 11, because it just came out a few months ago.
I believe we are the first movie to shoot on the iPhone 11. I think we are the first.
Yeah. So I want to take advantage of this and ask you, you know, sort of pretend I'm a reporter. It's like, well, okay, Rob, is this a game changer? Because the news all over the place and social media says, yes, it is. But you got the guy in front of me right now, well, sort of, who actually shot a feature with this phone. What does he say? What do you say, Rob?
I definitely think it is a game changer. I thought the 10 was sort of there, but I think all of the problems that I had shooting on the 10, where it seemed that even the apps weren't as developed for shooting on the phone, and especially the front-facing camera. The front-facing camera alone is a game changer. The look between the front-facing camera on the 10 versus the 11 is night and day. It is absolutely amazing, the front-facing camera. Not to mention the fact that it shoots 4K 60. That's whoa. And even with the ultra-wide, we use the ultra-wide maybe once, but the telephoto is now a 2.0, and that's a game changer. And the wide is a 1.8, and I don't know if it's always been a 1.8, but the clarity and the video quality of the 11 versus the 10, the last series, is literally game changing. It is capable of some of the most beautiful imagery that I have ever seen, and that's without any sort of expertise, like immediate expertise, where that you couldn't learn off of literally Googling things on your computer. I'm not talking about like you have to be, you know, Janusz Kaminski from, you know, Steven Spielberg's cinematographer. You don't have to be, you know, Bill Pope to make something that looks amazing. You literally can, like, I have done vlogs where I'm just holding the camera in my hand and pointing the camera at myself, and it looks amazing. And that kind of video quality that is just out of the box, available to any person who picks up the phone, has never been available, I don't think, in a phone. And that is why it is a game changer. To be able to be able of such quality, such high res imagery, without any sort of adaptions or
apps.
Like apps or anything like that, just from the native phone app or the Filmic Pro, just those sort of things, just out of the box, to have that level of quality in your pocket is a game changer. There's never been like that before. As a person who has had almost every iteration of the iPhone and has shot different things with it, I've never had as much fun, and I've never gotten as much pleasure out of the image that is coming out of this phone. And it is shocking to me. And
how well does it handle it shocking the low light? Too. Oh yeah, I bet.
It still is. I would not try it in low light. I would not. If you eventually get an iPhone that like it shoots in low light, it would change the game again. Something where like it shoots like a Sony A7 III or something like that, where you could shoot practically in the dark, that would be something else. But I almost feel like you have to give it its due. You should use lights. You should treat it, give it the respect that it should be earned. A lot of filmmakers want to do that thing that bothers me of like shooting without lights. Like we were in this parking lot and we were just shooting and we were lighting by a street lamp and they got away with it. They got away with it because of the camera, but ew. I'm not a fan of that kind of filmmaking. It bothers me. I mean, I love cheating as much as the next person, but you should learn to deal with your surroundings, and not necessarily that everything has to be like perfect 3-point lighting and that sort of thing. We had a mix of practicals and regular lights as we were shooting on the phone. But I do feel like at least the options for filmmaking are there now, like especially with the ultra wide, having these, having a lot of options for so that you can sort of duplicate any shot that you want on a phone. Like it's almost like having like a series of prime lenses on your phone instead of a zoom, something like that. I'm not necessarily a zoom lens kind of guy, but I love prime lenses. And it was kind of like having like a 35, an 85, and sort of a like a maybe like a 14 or 17 millimeter like lens, like all at once. And so with those three lenses, which is kind of how I shot my second movie, where we were just rented three primes and we just used those in, you know, where we needed to use the telephoto, we used the telephoto, where we needed to use the wide, we used the wide. And then that's sort of the way that I love to shoot. And it felt like I was shooting on sort of a mix between like a C100 and a Canon 70 or 80D had a baby. It would be like the iPhone 11.
Wow.
It was very much like just this really great experience. Not to mention the fact that I love being able to dial in your look on set. Filmic Pro allows you to do that. And also, we shot some things in a native camera app when things did get kind of dark. We got this beautiful shot of the one of our locations, like an exterior shot at night with no lights, except for it was lit up because of the holiday, and they had these beautiful lights, and we were able to shoot in near pitch dark and still got a really pleasing image. So certain low light is capable, but it's not like one of those, you know, kind of shoot in the dark with no lights kind of things yet. And I don't think that you should, but it's definitely not there yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you always need some kind of a light. I mean, it's like, well, what can you see with your eyes closed? Well, you know,
right.
Well, this is great. A lot of great information. Is there anything that well, let me give you a chance here. Give some people some shout outs that you'd like to give a shout out to who have really helped you. I know you were speaking about your instructor and stuff, but I think you're at a point now. You've got the iPhone 11. There's no excuse, Rob. We're gonna be friends now. You're gonna make a bunch of films, right?
Yeah. I definitely want to thank my filmmaker friends who, because the budget was at $1,000,
right?
There were some people that we borrowed things from. My friend Jordan Miller let us use his lavs. My friend Kevin Kangas, who, while being a horrible monster of a human being, I'm kidding, lent us the other H4N that we used. My friend Marcus, who is a producer on this movie, but also let us use his home. We shot in his home for 5 out of our 6 shooting days. Joni, who owns 1111 Cafe in downtown Frederick, she was our she let us use her cafe / bridal, or like she does alterations and fashion alterations for both bridal gowns as well as regular clothing. And she let us use her her cafe and all parts of it, and she just sort of let us take over the place for a day. She's also let us do that for Adrenal Lizard. She's an amazing human being, and I would love to give her a shout out, as well as Jack and Logan Lark, who are her partners over there. And Logan is in the film as one of our actors. And of course, besides those lovely people, the biggest shout out that I can give is to my wife, who followed me into this crazy journey that started back in March and has continued through this entire thing, and is definitely my better half, and is stayed with me through a lot of hardships. There were times when we were casting where we didn't know if we were going to be able to make this movie, and she stuck with me. And then there are certain tasks that I asked her to take over. At a certain point, I sort of threw the reins of casting over to her, and because of her, we found our lead actress, Teresa, who plays our Barbara. And without my wife Misha's sort of go-get-em attitude and her unwavering support, I don't know that we would have been able to pull this off. She's like my entire right half of my body. I don't know what I would do without her. And so without her, this movie would not exist. There aren't enough things that I can say about my wife. And
we could do the whole podcast on her. Oh my God.
She's great. And we started out, this is sort of our sort of second major collaboration, our third major collaboration, if you count Calla Lilies. And then fourth, I guess, with BBD. This is our second feature film collaboration, is what I'm trying to say badly. We started on my first movie, and she was the producer on that one. And it was the first time that I'd let someone else sort of take over my set. And I had never, I wasn't used to it. And I remember, like, after our first major day, and we came out, and she had dealt with all these problems with actors and hair and makeup people and crew, and like, I had dealt with none of those problems. And it was the first time that I could say that, where I had been on my own set and I didn't know what had happened all day, except for the fact that I had been shooting. And I just, she has a natural gift for producing, and she's now become a pretty formidable filmmaker in her own right. I remember telling her on that shoot that eventually she would be directing and shooting films of her own. And she disagreed with me, but now, of course, this last summer, she shot her first short film.
Awesome.
Where she directed and wrote. She wrote it and directed. So I'm using that as both sort of like a moment where I'm very proud of her, but it's also kind of a marital I told you so. those kind of things don't often bridge, but they did this time, and it's amazing. So, but yeah, without Misha's involvement in this and her steadfastness and her courage to sort of take on the material, I don't think that I could have pulled this off. I know that I couldn't have pulled this off, because making a movie for $1,000 is not for the faint of heart.
No, so let me get this straight. You wrote it, you shot it, you were the guy behind the camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you you didn't act in it, but you directed it.
Yes.
So you did all those three things, all on the iPhone 11.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that, you said, in 6 days.
Yes.
With $1,000.
Yes. Under SAG rules. No
yes.
Less.
On top of all that, plus you had more actors than crew.
Yeah. Yeah, 13 actors and only 4 crew members. Shout out also to my nephew Lance, who was a late addition to the crew. I remember the first day was just myself, Misha, and my other producer / sound guy, Marcus. And we just did not have enough hands. And I looked at Misha and I said, I don't know what we're going to do. And we sort of looked around to see who we could call to come in, and I called my nephew, and you know, he's young, he's in his 20s, and he could have said no and play video games all weekend, but he volunteered, showed up on time, and was the most positive person on set. And I could literally gush for an hour about my nephew and how awesome he was on that set. He literally got along with everyone, and he was just a joy, and he was sort of our MVP on set. He just came through when we needed him and was there almost every day. And without him, the movie would have been much, much harder. And so shout out to my nephew Lance for that.
So the next film that you're going to make, who's going to be involved in that one? Most of the people that were in this one?
Oh yeah. The people who I worked with are definitely my film family. Definitely my nephew Lance, of course Misha, who's the two of us are partners, and sort of Bespectacled Mofo, and of course I don't think I would go anywhere without Marcus. And there are certain folks that we picked up on Barbara that we'll definitely be working with again. One of my lead actresses, Gloria, I've been working with since 2007, so I always try to find a place in any production with her. My lead actor, Marcus, this is our second collaboration. I met him working on someone else's film, and I'll definitely try to find something for him. I do have sort of an idea for a Barbara trilogy in my head. The next one is called Again, Barbara. Or Barbara Again. Sorry, it's Barbara Again. And then the third one is.
Oh my God, it's Barbara.
No, well, I think it's called And Once Again, Barbara. where you wanted to see this sort of character like metamorphosize into something else. But yeah, I think if I did have like something, and I wanted to set the sequel for Barbara in a way that we could both grow and sort of had the sort of a similar set of parameters for Barbara in the sequel. But that's a little bit down the road. I'm not sure what 2020 has in store for us yet. We sort of cleared the queue of most of our active projects in 2019. So it'll be interesting to see what becomes sort of the favorite in 2020.
Well, I could tell you one thing. You probably just inspired a lot of people. Listeners to our podcast are, you know, professional amateurs and just people who are just interested in this whole thing, who may dip their feet in the water someday. And if you could, and I know you're really good at this, if you could somehow ignite the fire for anyone who's even considering doing this, whether they have an iPhone 11 or not, what would you say?
I would say that while everyone says that there's no excuse not to make a movie, like there really isn't. There are so many tutorials and free material available to you. Literally, you can take $1,000. $1,000 is something that you can save up for. You can take that and you can make a movie. You can make something of quality. You don't necessarily have to sell everything that you own. You don't have to crowdfund. You don't have to have access to the world's greatest actors. You can literally set things up and do things on your own with, and you don't even need a computer. You can edit. You can literally edit the project on your phone with LumaFusion. You can edit on your phone or on an iPad. Like, there's no excuse for you anymore. If you want to do something, if you're passionate about it, all it takes for you is to start. Just do one day. Just take it one thing at a time. Make a list of things that you need to do and just start knocking things off that list. You can do it. You literally can make something, to pull something out of the ether, turn something from your imagination and make it real. And that is the best kind of magic that exists in this world. If you can do that, you can literally bend the universe to your will and show the world something that you can be proud of. All it takes is for you to just start working. That's all it takes.
Right on. Thank you for taking the time to be in our podcast, Rob.
Oh, I appreciate it.